Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. I'm Konstantinos, your Chorus Call operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Türk Telekom conference call, third quarter 2018 financial and operational results. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Gözde Kulaş, Head of Investor Relations, Dr. Paul Downey, CEO, and Mr. Kaan Aktan, CFO of Türk Telekom. Ladies and gentlemen, you may now proceed.
Hello, welcome to 2018 third quarter results conference call. We are here with the management team, and today's speakers are our CEO, Dr. Paul Downey, and our CFO, Kaan Aktan. Before we start, I kindly remind you to review the notice on our earnings presentation. I will now hand over the call to Paul Downey. Thank you.
Thank you, Gözde. Before starting, I would like to welcome our new members of the board. I believe that the new additions will provide important oversight and contribution to the company with their expertise in strategic planning, financing, entrepreneurship and finance, especially in our telecom sector. And this will be in great support of all stakeholders. With the valuable contribution of our new board members, we will continue to implement our business plan in a more determined manner and support in growing the company in the direction that we have grown so far and also contribute to the economy of the country overall. On a sad note, however, yesterday we lost one of our board members, Mr. Abdullah Tivnikli, who served on several company boards over the past 10 years. We offer condolences to his family. May he rest in peace. He will be missed by all the management team who knew him. I would like to start with strategic highlights of the quarter on slide 3. Our strategy is fully on track, as you can see, and we continue to deliver on our strategic priorities. Our results demonstrate the strength and resilience of the business, together with the benefits of our early actions, which support the changing environment that we are now going through. Having said that, Turkey is fundamentally unique in its young, dynamic, and tech-savvy population, with a huge growth potential, offering numerous business opportunities, and we remain confident about the future growth and development prospects of the country and businesses in general. We continue to execute our successful strategy of driving fixed broadband growth through penetration-focused campaigns, which also proved to be helpful in the current macro environment. 50% of fixed broadband net additions in the third quarter came via penetration campaigns. Importantly, also upsells from our early, entry-level tariffs also accelerated, with more than 35% of our entry-level tariffs already upsold. There is significant potential for future growth in fixed broadband, with the support of our penetration initiatives. Of course, in this environment of inflation pricing incentives, this also supports the initiative of showing that we have low pricing. We also maintained our focus on best-in-class customer experience with digital solutions. We had significant improvements on our online self-service app, online İşlemler. Customer satisfaction score has increased substantially to 4.6 stars among iOS users in the third quarter. The number of TT Mobile users of the app more than doubled in the first 9 months of the year, reaching now 8.8 million, corresponding to 54% of our smartphone users. In the quarter, we launched new tools that enabled successful performance of the app, such as user-friendly interfaces, making it easier for subscribers to interact with us, and tools that enable us to run campaigns to provide better value for our subscribers. Our loyalty campaign, providing also rewards and free data and free minutes to our customers, has been an important contributor for momentum in this channel. I'm encouraged with the current improvements we have with this, both for its contribution in our customer experience journey and also in operational efficiency improvement, which is a matter we will be discussing shortly and increasing, therefore, shareholder value. Regarding our digital portfolio, we would like to also highlight some new KPIs on Tambo, our digital keyboard. Downloads reached in October 7.2 million. And the number of engagements via the Tambo toolbar increased to 14.7 billion since launch. These KPIs form a solid basis for future monetization. We will be releasing a new version of Tambo very shortly with features such as toolbar integrated food and drink, local search, web search, as well as gamification module. As a very recent development in our digital portfolio, we also launched Elek, which is our live mobile game, developed by our Argela subsidiary. This platform will also have future exciting applications, which will be we will announce in due course. During the third quarter, we continued our disciplined approach regarding capital efficiency. Following the cooperation protocol which is the leasing of fixed electronic communication infrastructure, this long leasing protocol we discussed earlier, with Turkcell, Vodafone, Turksat, and Telco there, we announced in the second quarter, third quarter, we signed the first pilot project with Vodafone, which of course will be also used by Super 9 of Turkcell for fixed infrastructure leasing in Sinjar, Ankara. Excavation works have already started in this selected area. So this is a very exciting development as we now have both a model for fixed sharing and we now have a leasing model for the fixed. Within the scope of this agreement, Vodafone will have a 15-year lease agreement with us, which of course is very efficient for their accounting of this CapEx contribution. So for them, they can account for it as a CapEx. And for our, we're getting the money for it as a CapEx. So it's a favorable prices to both sides. And this model allowed us also to utilize existing infrastructure effectively, for which, of course, the using party will be paying a leasing charge, while supporting all sector players in a more efficient capital utilization and therefore minimizing duplication. On the other hand, we continue to evaluate options to spread mobile sharing. As indicated before, our Zonguldak is, in fact, a sharing model in which there's a one-for-one sharing of a facility. We also have passive sharing, as you know very well, and now we are also working on active leasing model, which means rather than doing a one-for-one, the using party, say us, going onto Turkcell or Vodafone, we would pay a leasing charge to have access to their active facility, not only their passive facility, which means basically the base station, and therefore using our own spectrum onto their facility. We hope to be announcing something in that regard relatively shortly. Otherwise, we have what we already have for now, which is a good progress on both mobile and fixed to minimize duplicate investments in this important period of FX exposure. In the third quarter, we also continue to leverage on our strong subscriber base with our attractive multi-product offers. While we achieve to accelerate the number of subscriber additions to the record high levels, it is encouraging to see that more and more subscribers opt to have multiple telecom products. We now have the consent of 72% of our subscribers for sharing their information within the telecom group companies. And among the constant universe of customers who consented last year to share their multiple product information, this has increased from 58% in the third quarter 2017 to 63% in the last third quarter this year, driven by triple plays. The final strategic highlight is relating to consumer finance. In the third quarter, we launched a new consumer financing model to address mobile handset financing requirements of our customers in cooperation with ING Bank and Hemenel Finansman. With the hope of this model, we will facilitate our subscribers' mobile handset purchases while we will also be better able to manage our receivables risk. My friend Kanak Tan will be covering this in his parts. Now to slide 4. Our integrated business model with unmatched diversified portfolio, in addition to benefits of our penetration initiatives, enabled us to deliver impressive subscriber growth in the third quarter. Number of total Turktelecom subscribers have now reached 44.7 million, increasing by 10.4% year on year, which is the highest pace of the base growth since the IPO. Subscriber additions in the last 12 months was 4.2 million, which is, again, its strongest net add performance since the IPO. The main contributor to total subscriber net add of 1.2 million in this quarter is 586,000 net mobile subscriber additions. And the last 12 months, we gained more than 1.6 million mobile subscribers. We added 1.2 million net new broadband subscribers in the last 12 months with 288,000 net additions in the third quarter, fueled by penetration-focused Internet is Done campaign. In the home TV, we ended the quarter with 1.6 million subscribers, reinforcing our number two player position in the pay TV market. We had 149,000 net additions in the third quarter. Finally, positive trend in fixed voice subscriber additions continued with 90,000 net additions in the third quarter, supported by the momentum we had in penetration campaigns in the broadband segment. Now on slide 5, financial performance. During the quarter, we continued to execute with the financial and pricing discipline without sacrificing on our strategy of driving penetration and data consumption for sustainable growth. Our revenue growth in the third quarter accelerated to 19% year-on-year, the strongest top-line growth company achieved since IPO. Excluding IFRIC 12, revenue growth was 17% year-on-year. EBITDA performance outpaced revenue performance with an increased 34% year-on-year, reflecting strong revenue growth and our strong focus on efficiency improvements. EBITDA margin was outstanding at 42%. After hitting bottom in 2016, our EBITDA margin has been expanding thanks to all the initiatives undertaken by the team. On the back of this outstanding performance in EBITDA and revenue, we decided to raise our 2018 guidance, and Karahtan will be providing that to you shortly. On the other hand, negative impact of FX rates increased markedly in this quarter. We had more than 30% depreciation in the lira against both dollar and euro, and this resulted in a 2.8 billion net loss. On the other hand, underlying performance was very strong. Excluding impacts of FX losses and hedges, FX hedges, our net income increased to 1 billion lira in the last quarter from 638 million a year ago, by accelerating the top-line growth and improved EBITDA margin. It's also important to highlight that we generated a significant increase in unlevered free cash flow to 3 billion lira in the first 9 months, and also Karahtan will be providing more detail on that. Moving on to slide six on fixed broadband. We maintained our operational momentum in fixed broadband as our focus on penetration led to another quarter of strong subscriber additions. Our fixed broadband base increased to 10.6 million with 288,000 net new subscribers in the third quarter, out of which 50% came from the internet business then. At the same time, our fiber subscribers reached 3.4 million, up 229,000 in the third quarter, the highest third quarter fiber net adds we have achieved so far. Additionally, we also had a seasonality in fixed broadband third quarter thanks to back-to-school period starting September. Our partnerships with electricity companies continue, and their contribution in our net additions is increasing in line with our strategy of driving broadband penetration using diverse distribution channels. New deals with new electricity companies in other regions are progressing, and we aim to have presence in 32 cities covering almost 70% of households shortly. This will prove, in my opinion, to be a very important step over the next 12 to 24 months. So it's an essential investment we make at this time. During the third quarter, we implemented some price increases. At the beginning of July, we made our traditional yearly inflation price adjustments at around 9 to 10% for uncommitted subscribers. In addition to this, with higher inflation than we anticipated, we had another price increase in September at around 12 to 15% to the existing campaign prices for new activations. That increase is incremental to what we budgeted initially. Overall, those tariff updates, increasing share of premium fiber product and accelerating upsells from internet level packages, for instance, the 35% of the entry package subscribers have upgraded their tariffs so far, allowing us to generate an ARPU growth year on year to 44.4 lira. Sorry, contrary to the trends in the first half. Next, slide seven on upselling dynamics. Our subscribers are getting more value from our broadband product, benefiting from extensive range of our portfolio with different speeds and capacities. Specific to the third quarter, the share of subscribers with above 20 megabit per second speed in our total fiber broadband base increased to 36% from 30% a year ago. Significant demand for higher capacities continues with a fixed broadband average data usage over 90 gigabytes of data per month. The share of subscribers using above 100 gigabyte packages doubled to 16% from the total broadband base from 8% a year ago. We have a fiber home pass of 17.9 million, and we're present in every city in the country. Going forward, efforts of upselling and higher speeds capacities will provide value to our subscribers will continue. Next slide is on mobile performance. We delivered an excellent set of third quarter results in mobile. In line with our growth strategy, we achieved an outstanding performance by adding 586,000 net new subscribers, coupled with robust ARPU growth. Number of total mobile subscribers reached 20.8 million at the end of the third quarter, with 1.6 million net adds in 1 year, out of which 1.4 million was in high-value postpaid segments. As shown in the graph on the right hand, in the first 9 months of the year, we outpaced Turkcell with our strong net addition of 1.2 million, the highest first 9 million net additions we've had since 2014. We have been consistently increasing our subscriber market share, and our third quarter subscriber additions give us comfort on continuation of that performance going forward. We aim to strengthen our position in the mobile market with new partnerships such as we have now with Vestel Cell, which will be launched soon, and this will also provide for further drive of TV Boo over their new television sets, which do not require a set-top box. While accelerating the pace of growth in subscriber addition, we also had a visible ARPU uplift in the third quarter. The main drivers of 10% annual growth of our mobile ARPU are increase in data consumption and better tourism activity supporting roaming revenues. Apparently, there are signs of easing competition pressures in the overall market, and we have been making price increases around 15 to 20% in our mobile acquisition tariff since the beginning of October. Mobile data, next slide, slide 9. Share of LTE users continued to make progress in the third quarter, reaching 44% of our mobile base, up by 12 percentage points from a year ago, while our LTE population coverage expanded from 80% to 89%. Acceleration of average monthly data usage by 38% year-on-year to 6.5 gigabytes, with increasing LTE compatible smartphone penetration to 75%, resulted in 23% annual growth in data revenues in the third quarter. Data revenue share was 56% of our mobile service revenues in the same quarter. Similarly, leadership in smartphone penetration continued with 82% of our total subscriber base. Going forward, our alternative consumer financing model, Khan will explain a bit more on that part relating to smartphone penetration. Slide 10, TV performance. In television, we also delivered very successful results. As of the end of the third quarter, we have 1.6 million TV Boo home subscribers, an increase of 149,000 in the last quarter. Satellite net additions were particularly strong as we continue to push our wireless home strategy, in which we aim to address the mass TV market with affordable pricing. On the other hand, amid current inflationary environment, the following market trends we increased the prices of our TV portfolio. Still, we kept our prices at attractive levels compared to premium players in pay TV market to address each house, especially where with our synergy offers like mobile plus TV Boo campaign. In the third quarter, 96% of the satellite TV sales was with a mobile synergy offer. I think this is a very important metric that indicates how a bundle between a mobile satellite provides for a future upsell, such as a future data into these homes, because this is a wireless home and they will be needing TV Boo Go, which will require more mobile data, and we'll have more to say about that in this coming quarter. We have taken many steps in TV Boo business so far, rising to the number two player in the market with 21% market share, outstripping both cable and D-Smart, while we had only 10% market share 2 years ago. In addition to the importance of content, this performance demonstrates the strength of being an integrated player with diverse segments, large customer base and strong sales network. We have not only the Turkish Basketball League broadcasting rights exclusively for 3 years, but we also have 200 TV channels, 6,000 plus VOD with differentiating self-install options and user interfaces. We are providing all of these features with attractive prices, especially with the mobile TV bundles, since we are positioning TV as an attractive tool within bundles. Just an extra note on the television market in general is that there are no mass market players with any level of premium local content. Most of the local content is provided in a free form with ad revenue coming from conventional advertising over television. That is actually the reason why catching pay TV, even though it's a very aggressive price, is in a very easy to access mode, which I think is unique in a market like Turkey, where people watch a lot of TV but have limited choices of premium content for pay TV, meaning the revenue comes from advertising. Next slide, 11, is fixed voice. The performance we delivered in fixed voice over the last 1 year is a clear sign of the success of our actions. We position fixed voice as a valuable component in our bundles, and to Turk Telecom fixed voice subscribers, we provide additional benefits in our other services. Latest example of this approach is the Internet Bizden. This is bearing fruits for more than 1 year, delivering subscriber gains in this traditional voice services despite substitution from mobile voice and or VoIP. In the first 9 months of this year, we gained 230,000 net fixed voice subscribers. During the first 9 months, there is also an increasing trend in the fixed voice ARPU from 22.5 in the third quarter. We implemented 9% price increase to our uncommitted subscribers in our fixed voice tariffs, coupled with increases in some one-time off fees. We're also recontracting at higher prices. We closed relatively aggressive offers. All in all, third quarter fixed voice revenues posted a positive annual growth of 1.2% after many years of decline. I hand over to Mr. Rafka.
Thank you, Paul. Hi, everyone. We are now on slide 13 with more details on financials. Quarterly revenues reached to now 5.4 billion lira. This is growing at 19% year on year. The main contributors were mobile and fixed broadband, which both grew at strong double-digit rates of 18% and 14% respectively. Growth in mobile is particularly strong, with service revenue increase of 19%. This is driven by both subscriber and ARPU growth. We had one of mobile revenue booking in this quarter, which mostly offset the impact of lower commission revenues on device sales. As you remember, we have a decline in our device commissions due to our more prudent approach in device sales by putting simply the first focus on collection performance. In order to further support this initiative, we now started the consumer financing program with partner financial institutions, ING Bank and Hemen Al Finansman, which is a subsidiary of QNB in Turkey, are included in this program. This model will allow us to reduce the bad debt risks, which we have already achieved to some extent as of today. This will also enable us to design more attractive device campaigns and strengthening our competitive position in the market. We started offering this financing model in more than 60 Turk Telecom stores, and our target is rolling out quickly to reach 90% of our exclusive stores in the last quarter of this year or early next year. Our international revenues are up by 45% year on year. This is driven by higher FX rates in the third quarter. Our fixed voice revenues contributed positively to the consolidated revenue growth after many years of decline. During the quarter, we maintain our pricing discipline. We are adjusting our pricing plans according to new parameters of our macro environment. We had two price adjustments in fixed broadband in the third quarter. We increased fixed voice prices in the last quarter, and in mobile, we have started having material price changes in October. All our efforts are for reaching to our long-term market share target of 30% in mobile, but while doing so, we will be financially disciplined. EBITDA was boosted in the quarter due to not only record high revenue growth, but also thanks to our disciplined cost management efforts. We focus on group synergies, organizational streamlining, digitalization, and receivable controls. These factors led to 34% growth year-on-year in EBITDA, much higher than revenue growth. In the third quarter, we had an optimized commercial spending. Excluding IFRS 15 impact, we have 15% year-over-year decline in commercial costs. There is room for further efficiency on commercial expense side, such as directing more of our customers to our digital channels for both acquisition and customer service, upsells, digital invoice, and subscriptions. On the other hand, higher FX rates and increasing electricity prices drove our network expenses higher in the third quarter. We also had an increasing tax expense in relation to strong growth in mobile revenues. All in all, network and technology expenses combined with tax expense increased 31% year on year. It's also important to point out that personnel expenses increased by 8.8% year over year in this quarter. The effects of wage increases of non-unionized personnel will be mostly visible in the second quarter of next year. This is giving us some flexibility until the reflection of inflation to revenues. For this year, we now expect mid to high single digit, closer to mid levels, growth in personnel expenses. EBITDA margin in the third quarter was very sound at 42%. Even if you exclude IFRS 15 impact, EBITDA margin is 39%, indicates 2 percentage point improvement compared to a year ago. Looking at the trend, I'm very pleased to see that the turnaround in EBITDA margin, which had started in last year, has now reached to a sustainable level, which is above 40%. We had 5.1 billion TL net financial expense in the third quarter due to decline in Turkish lira against dollar and euro. As a result, we recorded 2.8 billion loss in the bottom line. I would like to emphasize that excluding FX impact, the net income is at 1 billion level, which is showing close to 60% annual growth on the back of revenue growth and operational efficiencies. We are taking many measures to reduce the impact of future FX headwinds. I will explain them in the next slide. We had a high tax income of close to 1 billion in the third quarter, since the losses we recorded during the period were mostly at Türk Telekom's solo financials. This allows us to use carry forward losses quickly due to strong fundamentals of the standalone entity. CapEx in this quarter was at 1.2 billion. This is in line with our plans. Year-on-year growth is due to base impact, and we broadly maintain our CapEx guidance despite the depreciation of Turkish lira. We are now moving to slide 14. At the end of the third quarter, our net debt increased to 18.1 billion, and we have 2.3 times as net debt to EBITDA. The increase is mainly due to non-cash FX losses, while we had a very strong cash flow, as we will discuss. We have a covenant limit of 2.5 times in all our loan agreements. Our covenant limit is comparatively low, considering industry standards and practices. We believe that we can also comfortably increase if it's needed. We have a strong liquidity of 6.2 billion lira as cash at the end of the quarter. We only have 2.5 billion lira debt repayment during the next two quarters. We also have a committed facility of around $100 million. We will continue with our prudent approach, and we plan to maintain sufficient liquidity. We have alternative financing instruments such as vendor financing, refinancing of the existing debt, and also TL-based financing. We might also consider a Eurobond issuance early next year, and the decision will purely depend on getting the best market conditions. Looking at our hedge position, we executed additional participating cross-currency swap transactions of $200 million plus 108 million euro during the quarter. We reach now to around $1.5 billion equivalent of participating cross-currency swap position in total. On top of that, we have increased FX portion of cash as a tool to hedge our FX-based debt. At the end of the quarter, our FX-based cash is at 84% of the total cash, which is up from 61% of a year ago. The dollar equivalent of hard currency cash is now $807 million. As we discussed before, because of high Turkish lira depreciation, the protection of our existing hedges has declined. In order to address that, we increased the protection level of our existing hedges during the third quarter. Including the FX-based cash, our hedged portion of the debt increased to 57% in this quarter, which was 44% in the second quarter. And we have plans to go above 60% until year-end. We are now on slide 15. Our impressive EBITDA growth, normalized CapEx, and sound working capital management gave us an outstanding cash flow performance. We expect that strong cash flow generation will continue over the next 12 months, since there will be no license fee payments or dividend payment. Our unlevered cash flow in 9 months, in year-to-date, was 3 billion lira, which is compared to around 300 million lira of last year. We also expect a high cash flow in the fourth quarter. It's also encouraging to see that now our mobile subsidiary is contributing to the creation of operating free cash flow. Our ability on cash flow generation will enable us to deleverage to our comfort zone and in order to get to 1.5 times in 1 to 3 years' time. And as clearly seen on the chart on this page, our current leverage is well behind the leverage ratio of many EMEA telecom operators. Finally, on slide 16, you can see our revised guidance. In the first 9 months, our top line, excluding IFRIC 12, adjustment grew 12% year over year, and our EBITDA reached 6.2 billion lira with a margin of 41%. On the back of the initiatives we have undertaken and strong performance in this quarter, we are now raising our year-end guidance. We expect the consolidated revenue growth to be around 13%, which was previously 11%. Consolidated EBITDA to be at the range of 8 billion to 8.2 billion lira, which is up from 7.6 to 7.8, and consolidated CAPEX to be at 4.2 billion. Now we may start the Q&A session.
First question comes on the line of Tyrone Cesar with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi everyone. Thanks for the call and the opportunity to ask questions. I have 3 questions, hope that's okay. The first one would be on the infrastructure sharing. Could you please share any metric which you feel relevant so we better understand how material these agreements would be with a 2 to 3 year view, for example, in terms of CapEx savings? Second, on the mobile side, can you please share with us what you think drove the ARPU increase both in postpaid and prepaid besides the price hikes that you've implemented, especially since don't impact postpaid ARPU in one go? And then the third question would be on OPEX. So looking at your margins, excluding the IFRS changes, they've increased by about 200 basis points in compared to last year. Is it fair to assume that some of this is due to the delay in the inflation pass-through for some of the costs? I mean, obviously, we have your revised guidance on EBITDA for 2018, but is it fair to say that some of those costs might only increase materially in 2019? Thank you so much.
Okay, I'll take the infrastructure sharing quickly. Look, I mean, the basic idea behind, for example, let's say a mobile passive sharing is primarily a one-for-one. So what that means basically is that a tower for a tower. So the saving there is that you would be just installing your own active base station onto somebody else's passive. If, however, you're doing active sharing, that then the entire cost of CapEx and OPEX is then shared primarily, if it's a sharing model, is 50-50. If it's a leasing model, what we plan to do, because the sharing model is a bit more obvious when you do it on a one-for-one basis, even if you end up shutting down station, relocating a base station, those costs, of course, will be shared equally. At a certain point, your saving is primarily up to, say, 50% of what you are doing. If it's a pay model, then what we do there is that we are going to be comparing what's the better price that we can get between Turkcell and Vodafone, especially for the urban areas. The urban areas, it would be more efficient to do it this way, especially in that you'll be paying one rental. So if you take site rental plus facility running costs, plus, of course, the CapEx annualized, it can decline to up to something around half. Ideally, of course, it approaches half in the ideal world. So that's basically how it works in the mobile field. In the fixed line field, the model there is based actually on a CapEx contribution model. So the value to the requesting party is that somebody wants to use our infrastructure. The alternative to them is to roll it out themselves. So the win to them is that they would be doing around half of the funding, which presumably would be roughly around what should be their equity, if you like, for this type of investment. And the rest of it would be leased from us. The advantage, of course, to the acquiring party is cheaper than doing it themselves, and you could say that their CapEx exposure would be around half what it would be if it's done otherwise, These are the numbers that we have found would work to both sides, by the way, because the first model that we tried on the fixed on Istanbul was more like a 75-25. That didn't work. 50-50 worked. Of course, the advantage to Telecom in this particular case is that we are able to meet demand without us carrying the full capex increment if this suits the acquiring party as well. That's therefore, and of course, we end up owning the assets. And we did it in a manner that the acquiring party can also account for it in a manner that works. And I think what we've learned from the fixed line model, we are now trying to design a mobile, because that's a pay model. So what you pay incrementally for the party to carry your infrastructure is a capex contribution, in this case from us, on a right of use, almost indefinite. We account for it as a capex because it will be on like a 15-year lease. We can also account for it, therefore, efficiently. And, of course, the total cost should end up being, ideally, around half what it would if you do it yourself.
Hello, my name is Hakan, Chief Marketing Officer. For the mobile part, actually, in the third quarter of 2018, we achieved a revenue service revenue growth of 19.2%, which is a very strong revenue performance. And this performance is also above incumbent service revenue growth. At the same time, we were able to achieve a strong net add. In the last four quarters, we had significant net adds, and we were able to increase our subscriber market share for more than 1 percentage point. So given that our strategy on mobile is to get to a 1/3 of the market share, but not at the cost of profitability, our execution proves that we will be able to execute and achieve our strategy on the mobile side, because we were able to achieve a market share increase as well as a 10% ARPU increase, and in total our market, our mobile service revenue is growing very strongly. Third quarter in the market was a rational quarter in terms of pricing. The incumbent started increasing the prices in the market, which Vodafone followed and also we followed. Also going forward, we will evaluate every opportunity. We will watch the market closely, and if there is any opportunity on rationalizing the prices further, we will definitely take a timely action on that, but we will also continue to gain market share on the subscriber side.
Well, this is Kaan. So regarding your question on OPEX and the impact of inflation and actually also the devaluation, well, it depends on which line item we are referring to. As I mentioned during the call, especially on the network and technology side, the impact has been already reflected to our numbers. It came through the increased prices because of FX-based spending on especially network and technology, and also by the price increase in electricity and energy costs in the same line item. The other significant part of the OPEX comes from headcount-related costs, and it will be fair to say that the full impact of the inflation adjustment, the next time we'll do it, will be mostly visible when we come to the mid-year next year. We are adjusting the salaries in the second quarter for the bulk part of the of our headcount, and you should have the full impact reflected to the numbers in the third quarter. For the commercial spending, and also for the doubtful receivables, which is kind of a reflection of the commercial activity, we are very disciplined. And independent of the impact of the inflation, which we might have some next year, we will still be very disciplined in the spending.
Thank you so much. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Davis JP with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you and congratulations on the results. I have two questions. This is JP from JP Morgan. The first one is on your hedging in the quarter. You mentioned that you've added additional cross-currency swaps and strengthened existing hedge positions. Can you give us an indication of what this will do to your effective interest rate going forward? I assume that these cross-currency swaps come with certain costs attached to them. Separately, it looks like you've put through a material revaluation of your plant, property, and equipment. Can you please talk us through that and what the impact may be on the depreciation schedule going forward? Thank you.
Yes, we have a mixed portfolio of old transactions and new transactions that we executed in the third quarter. So very briefly, the average cost of the hedged portion of the debt is now around 10 to 11%. And combined with unhedged portion, the total cost will be roughly around 6 to 7%. But naturally, the new hedges especially are coming at a higher cost. We may have some further transactions to be executed in the last quarter, but the amount, the size will not be as significant as we did so far. For the revaluation of the asset, so naturally this is not a new company, so all the assets on the real estate side were recorded at their historic values and very deeply discounted compared to the fair market value, and we really wanted to bring more visibility to the value of those assets and also to grow or protect our equity. So this doesn't change our plans or no plans on the real estate. It will be a business as usual with those assets. So the company will fully depend on its operating performance and cash flow going forward.
Thank you. Just to confirm, you said that the overall effective interest rate was between a corridor of 6 and 7%. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Resnick Mitch with Hermes. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Two debt-related on the covenants. So at 2.3 times, getting close to that 2.5, you mentioned you can increase the covenant room. Could you specify some specifics around that? Have you started negotiations? Is that done? Where do you think that needs to go in terms of the covenant room? I mean, obviously from an operating point of view, things are moving well and fine, so I don't suppose that would be an issue, just some color around that. And then on the plans for the Eurobond issue, you mentioned early next year, assume proceeds would be to redeem the existing bond that matures in 19. Just some clarification on that. And then can you talk through the cash value of the hedges that you have now, the ones that are in the money, just so we can have that number to add back to the liquidity profile of the business? Thank you.
Yes, the end of the quarter, third quarter, this was the time where we had the dollar rate as close to 6. Our covenant, actual covenant was at 2.3. Well, considering the current level of the FX and also the improving EBITDA performance every quarter, and I would like to remind you that the official measurement is at mid-years and end of the years. So when we approach to the year end, there will be a sizable headroom still left to 2.5, the contractual obligation of the company. So in that sense, we are in a much comfortable place as of today. The discussions are very new with the banks, so it will be misleading to give you any reference to the new level or whether it's doable easily or in a short period of time. So when we have more details on the new levels, when we start the discussions, we'll definitely let you know.
Okay.
And what was the second question? I remember the third one, but that was the second one.
I rattled off through pretty quickly. The third question was on the your comments about plans to issue a Eurobond in early in 19. Just confirmation, yes, use of proceeds would be for redemption of the existing bond.
That's true. That's one of the alternative financing. So we will be obviously very careful in getting the right price if we do it next
right.
year. I say next year because we see the window of opportunity to be there will be some window of opportunity. That's how we see the market in next year with a better price than what we have today. But that's not the only option. If we get it, obviously we may use the cash for repaying our bonds in mid-year next year. But we have other alternatives as well. Obviously, the best tool is the cash we generate, because the company is very clearly in a very strong cash flow generation period. That's something we expected to see, but this is also very, very clearly reflected to our numbers. And we expect to have a similar trend to be in place for the next 12 to 18 months. Other than this, we are still investing and buying and procuring equipment from international suppliers, and normally we want them to provide a certain financing together with the procurement through ECA. We always have the opportunity to tap that market through ECA. And as I said, we may even consider a local currency borrowing. It will be all about getting the right price, getting the right risk composition.
Okay. And then the last question I had was on the cash value of the hedges that are in the money.
Yes, true. We have a positive net mark-to-market in those items, but currently we don't have a plan to unwind so that we can use the cash in case.
Okay, and is it sort of the value of those hedges? Is it? Can you give a number? I mean, or you can just steer me to the financials.
I think all details are in our footnotes and financial statements.
Okay, I'll have a look. Great, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Dred Herve with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking as well my questions. A couple of questions. The first one is, firstly, about the initiative, you know, the government initiative to limit inflation. Wanted to, on your side, how you are involved with your initiative, and what do you believe will be the impact in the coming quarters? And do you believe those initiatives are going to last? And looking forward, how potentially that may impact the way you set in the future tariff and how the regulator might be involved potentially in terms of wholesale pricing. The second question is on the cost side. You mentioned obviously on the impact of the inflation, especially on the energies and network cost, which tends to come relatively quickly. But back to the employees' cost. Can you remind us when do you usually renegotiate the salaries? I mean, is it something more you do more in Q1, and where we may see more of inflation impact on the employee cost more towards the beginning of 2019? Or and if it is the case, where do you think we might see the expense employee cost, you know, growing at that time? Do you think it can still be below inflation? And finally, about the savings, back to the first questions on you may get from sharing of the network. You are mentioning this 50% potential savings you may do on CapEx by the sharing. Just wanted to mention, does it include, when you say that, is it total cost, i.e. the CapEx plus the leasing cost, everything being taken into total? So both of them, both sides, do you believe you can achieve this 50% savings through those CapEx sharing exercises? Thank you.
Let me start with the first part. To manage the revenue side of our business, basically, I will answer the pricing part first. We have recently done inflationary price adjustments to almost all our services. I mean, in summary, we increased our mobile prices around 15-20% in the last couple of weeks. Plus, we also applied 12-15% increase to our fixed broadband offers in the market, which is also very recent. And we will continue to act in a financial disciplined way, of course, to manage our revenues in a positive way. For the government side, we haven't seen any pressure from the government side yet, and we are not expecting, actually. The government launched an anti-inflation campaign for voluntary participation, so there is nothing mandatory. And we have full support on this program as a main company in this country. Basically, we are participating to the campaign with a 10% discount for the first 3 months of a contracted acquisition campaign on selective tariffs in mobile, fixed broadband, and TV businesses, which in total is a positive business case for us anyways. And this is also ensuring a smooth transition for our new increased prices at the same time. So we see this as a positive. For the second question, I am passing to our CEO.
Basically, we have two group of employees, like you can call them white collars and blue collars. The blue collar part, which is smaller in number of headcount, and also the share they get from the total headcount cost, they may have a slight adjustment at the beginning of the year, but the impact will be limited. And the real adjustments, the real impact of the inflation will come with the new agreement we signed with this group at mid-year. For the bulk part, which is the white collar, the inflation adjustment is made in end of April. So. When we finish the second quarter or when we get the third quarter numbers, all the adjustments will be fully reflected into the numbers. Until then, the first and second quarter, there will be a gradual increase in the headcount-related cost. But I'm excluding from discussion the potential moves between in-house and outsource employees, because from time to time we may have different approaches, because we are also using some outsourced services. Sometimes we take them into the company as an employee, or we are doing the opposite of this. But if anything happens in that sense, we will give enough details.
Okay, I mean, your question on sharing, when I give the 50% as the, if you like, ideal number, if you imagine, for example, a greenfield mobile, two operators, sharing model, each one runs their spectrum either on their own built facility or on somebody else's. If they were splitting everything one for one, the rough saving will be around 50%, right? Of course, in reality, if you are relocating your base stations to fit onto somebody else's, so you're gridding up, there are costs to do that. That's why, you know, it wouldn't be really 50% if you have an existing facility. And if you get to the active leasing model, it will also depend on the charging margin and what is the cost to the party on which you are going. And therefore, it's important to grid to the other party's network and to find which of them is giving you a lower price. If you were to compare, let's say, for example, doing it in a built-up area where you need to build 5,000 additional base stations compared to going onto somebody else's, the saving is unlikely to be the absolute full 50% in this case. So the sharing model would normally work better. If it's a pay model, the idea there is to go with whoever gives us the lowest price.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks very much. That's very clear.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Sing Mawei with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, on the debt side of things, given the impact you have seen and volatility you have seen on the currency, do you think that the strategy of continuing to borrow in hard currency is still, you know, the right strategy to follow, or would you think that maybe, you know, reducing the hard currency exposure on debt side somewhat, and, you know, like deleverage fast, especially given that you're not paying a dividend as well, and then, you know, maybe if that means, you know, you grow a bit slower, that is okay. And secondly, just a related question on that, assuming that, you know, there would be no dividend for this year, given the FX losses and all, what do you think, how do you think 2019 dividend would look like? Thank you.
For the funding part, the first part of the question, I mean, local currency funding obviously is within our plan. We made the decision to raise local currency exposure in our total funding. I mean, the way to do it is obviously the more preferred way is to create a real Turkish lira exposure by borrowing in local currency, and that's mostly through the from the local parties. But we didn't have the right market conditions for doing that. So when we have the right price and right level of liquidity in that market, we'll definitely like to be part of it through maybe a local bond issuance or with different instruments. But as you see in the way we act for dealing the FX risk, we will be using the derivative instrument to convert our hard currency exposure to local currency exposure. That obviously we already have a large debt portfolio. The easiest way to convert to local currency is to use hedging alternatives. We will also continue doing that. As I said, in the long term, there should be a real Turkish lira debt instrument within our portfolio.
What about on dividend?
For the dividend part, obviously we have a very straightforward policy for the dividend, which says if there is net income in a year, this is distributed. When I look to the numbers for that year and where the FX is as of today, it will be a very difficult, Rishad, to say that there will be dividend next year based on those factors.
Sorry, I meant about the dividend for 2019 earnings, so the one which will be paid into 2020, not 2019.
I mean, again, it's the same principle will be in place. So far, there's no change to that. If you see there is net income next year, then we may consider the dividend payment, but again, it's totally depending on the shareholder decision. If they see that,
actually,
the losses should be...
Sorry, basically, the background of the question is that I have heard that, in future you will have a change in the legislation which will allow you to remove FX losses from the calculation of net income to, pay a dividend. So I'm just wondering, by when can you actually start doing that?
I think we didn't take it from that perspective. I mean, what we know, it's not impacting the formulation of the dividend payment. It's a formulation for local legislation to comply with the capital adequacy ratios. If there is net income, but the shareholder wants to keep the money in the company because we have a loss in this year, that's fully depending on their decision. So I think it will be too early to make a judgment on that one.
Okay, thank you.
next question comes from the line of Ozgan Atint with Wood & Co. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Atint from Wood & Company. First of all, please get my deepest condolences for your loss at board level. If I may, I'd like to ask three questions. The first one is regarding your recent accounting change in the way you account for your land bank. Is this just a more realistic accounting practice being taken into consideration or a sign of future disposals to raise cash? So that's the first question. The second one is, earlier in the presentation, Kaan, they mentioned a net debt over EBITDA target in 3 years, but I missed that. Was that 1.5 times? If you could clarify that, I would be pleased. And my third question is regarding your pay TV segment. Now that you are in, you have secured number two position, do you see any sign of widening use of Netflix on your network, and whether this is a source of concern for you, and any plans you may have to invest in additional premium content, if you could elaborate on those. Thank you.
Well, the first question on the land and building, as I mentioned in the prior question, it's purely for bringing visibility and transparency to the balance sheet by putting the right value or the fair value of the assets and strengthen the equity. So there is no change in our plans for disposing or not disposing the assets. So we will not be depending on any funding or cash that we can generate from the sale of the fixed assets. That's not within our plan. The company is already in a natural way of deleveraging. If you look to the numbers in dollar based, in mid-year last year, our net debt was around $3.6 billion. Now we are at the level of 3.1. And maybe we are doing in a hard way, but we are deleveraging the company by simply creating cash from the operations, and that will continue. For the covenant part, I mean, we always want to, converge to 1.5 level, but there is a part that we cannot control in this story, which is the FX rate. So we have a unhedged portion of the debt. So depending on the effects, there may be moves up or down in our leverage ratio, but we will definitely like to be below 2 and converge to 1.5 into 2-3 years' time.
I mean, for the TV part, we are happy to reach 25.1% market share, up from 10% 2 years ago. Our pay TV strategy is to offer affordable prices to mass market, especially with satellite TV and as bundled with our other services. We have a very strong content that we can offer at affordable prices. This includes Basketball League exclusive for 3 years, English Premier League, all documentary channels, kids channels, video on demand content, music channels. So it's a very strong content proposal, and it's getting a very good reaction in the market. Regarding global content players like Netflix, we do not see them as competitors to our TV book platform, especially as Turk Telecom, we see them as complementary. So we are evaluating every opportunity to cooperate and add to our existing strong content, so we don't see them as a competitor in this sense. Of course, for such players, there is also an opportunity on the corporate data line side and data center placement side. So we are always open to such opportunities and in discussions with such players on a continuous basis.
I think if you mean, this is Paul Delaney, if you mean that on like network carriage, like video capacity carriage, as a burden on the network.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
Yeah, okay. So the answer to that basically is that Netflix market share in Turkey, in fact, is very small, and we're very happy to carry that traffic because people, if you really want to know what's the biggest burden on our video carriage, I mean, Netflix is definitely one of them. You know, a good part of that would be general YouTube and some illegal film watchers, which actually, unfortunately, is illegal, but in fact, you know, they need connectivity for that. If you take the average within our 90 gigabyte average capacity per home, it's a very, very small percentage of that is actually normally pay type, which for us is very important in the sense that we actually want people, of course, to need more, to upsell more in relation to capacity. So any form of pay service the customer pays for, they pay us and they pay Netflix, is very good. If they have access to like free video, which frankly is a bigger share of what we have to carry, that's actually what we use to upsell. So as there is more demand, if anything, that's also good for us. In relation to our fee, the complementarity part that what Hakan is mentioning is that if you watch anything when you want it, such as YouTube or Netflix or whatever, because you can watch it as you stream it, the difference between our normal satellite TV is that that's basically coming through satellite, and therefore the catch-up version of it is what we can provide over TV Boo Go, for example, and that becomes something very important whether you have a fixed broadband connection in the home or the ability for one such as a copper line in there, or you can have more data on your mobile. And again, all of these are ways that we can use to upsell or carry more data. So we're not actually in that burden syndrome.
Okay. That's very useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Vladimira Ludovico with Kairos Partners. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to make questions. So I've got two questions, actually. First, I would like to know whether you think that there might be a capital increase somewhere in the future. And then could you please tell us kind of a bit more on the interest rates that you pay? I mean, if I got it right from the question from JP Morgan, your hedging costs around 11%, and then you have kind of some 6% of effective rate. So this makes something like 17% on your USD-based debt. Is that right? Thanks so much.
Okay, for the capital increase, we don't see any such plans for now or in the future, and we don't have any proposition or request from the shareholders for having a capital increase in the company. For the second question, I said that I mean the hedged portion comes with a now cost of 10 to 11%. The unhedged portion comes with a cost of 3 to 4%. So the weighted average for the total debt portfolio comes to 6 to 7%. Are those numbers clear? And they make sense?
Yes, no, but, yes. So may I ask you, which is the rate in Turkish lira? Okay, because, so I guess that if it's 4% in US dollar, then...
Yeah, the obviously 10 to 11% is the rate for the Turkish lira part of the, or the hedged part of that. So,
yeah. Okay.
You can simply, you know, multiply 6 to 7% over the total value of the debt, and you get the net interest charge on a cash basis from that from the total debt.
Okay, thank you.
You had a question on capital increase?
Yes. Okay, I said no capital increase.
Okay.
We can have the next question.
The next question comes from the line of Farazid Dilawar with Loomis Sales. Please go ahead.
Hi there, it's Dilawar Farazi here from Loomis House. Quick question. Given the volatility in FX rates that we've seen, What's your the hedge ratio? I think you alluded to earlier on, you want to be around 60% by the end of the year. How do you actually structure your hedging strategy? Do you look at it on a quarter-by-quarter basis? You know, what's the process involved in that? That's the first question. The second question is around the covenant renegotiation. Can we expect to have news on that by the end of this year, or is it an imminent thing, or is it an ongoing sort of long drawn out process? Thank you.
For the covenant question, obviously it's not a you know, pressing issue for us right now, looking at where the FX rate is. But simply we want to have the flexibility in case there is further volatility in the FX rate. But again, if the negotiations are not moving in the direction that we like them to be, so we will not participate to any such deal. I cannot tell you that there is an officially started process, initiated process around this. This is just right now an idea, and this is why we are bringing this up. So, and let me remind you that again, with 6 lira as the currency rate at the end of the quarter, we were at 2.3 multiple. And what was the first question again?
It was about the
ratio.
Strategy,
yeah.
What's the process?
I got it, the hedge ratio. So it was part of a long-term plan, by the way. So we have a very low ratio last year, so we had a plan to increase gradually the hedge portion of the debt every quarter. So obviously with the volatility that we saw in the third quarter, we went a little bit higher than what we planned. And we are still wanting to be above 60, not to stay at 60. It will again depend on the market conditions. So far, the rate seems to be in a far better level compared to the end of the quarter. But the other parameters is obviously the level of the interest rate. So whenever we see that we have the right numbers and we can get a effective protection in return for a meaningful cost, so we may have higher percentages. Let me not give you the level that we want to get at the year end, but let me just say that we want to be above 60 for the time.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the conference over to Turk Telecom Management for any closing comments. Thank you.
Okay. Everyone, thank you for participating. Let's be turned to the call. Thank you.
Thank you.